spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So, this is a strange edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find on sfmsports.net, Stitcher, Spreaker, and most of all, Audio Boom. You can go on Facebook and find us at the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All podcast. You can retweet us, follow us on Twitter, at bsportsfree, the number for all. And we finally have a post on sportsblog.com. It actually has to do with a Ravens poll, which I will mention later on in the show. And speaking of the Baltimore Ravens, they are going to be last on this show. We're saving the best for last, unfortunately, on this week's show. Going to be talking Maryland Terrapins football first, since they had the more successful week this weekend in terms of Maryland / Baltimore sports. And the Orioles will be second in command, then followed lastly by the Baltimore Ravens. This week, Ray Atkinson is currently doubtful on the injury report with a case of the Marlon Brando-itis / Godfather / Don Corleone voice. Yeah, his voice box is so jagged today that he was not able to compete today on the show. So I'm going to be doing my solo bit here. Hopefully I will appease you listeners. If not, you can just let me have it on the social media spectrum of everything. But this week we're going to be starting off with the Maryland Terrapins, who, after a terrible showing in week two against what was a team that I just could not believe that they didn't even compete against, was Bowling Green, 48-27 in week two. They take on South Florida and win that home game 35-17. And surprisingly, a quarterback who the week before in two of his three pass attempts threw two interceptions against Bowling Green. That was one redshirt junior, Caleb Rowe, who actually wasn't bad this week against the South Florida Bulls. Caleb Rowe was actually quite efficient. 21 for 33, 297 yards, four touchdowns. Granted, he threw three interceptions, but kept the team in the game more so than out of it, so to speak. It was a solid win for the Terps offensively. Caleb Rowe, of course, putting up the touchdowns and the yardage. Brandon Ross didn't have a spectacular rushing day, averaging 3.8 yards per carry, 18 carries for 68 yards total. Did get a TD, though, so that was nice to see from young Brandon Ross. As far as the receiving core goes for the Maryland Terrapins, Laverne Jacobs, 8 catches for 107 yards, no touchdowns, but certainly was a key player on the Terps' offense in terms of their victory. You had Tavon Jacobs, who had 2 catches, 82 yards, including a 70-yard long catch there. Ed had a touchdown as well. Avery Edwards, 3 catches, 36 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Kenneth Goins Jr., 1 catch, 1 yard, 1 touchdown. So I guess if you have to get 1 catch for 1 yard, that 1 yard better be a TD play. So good job there, Goins Jr. You certainly have earned some playing time in next week's game. Sean Davis on defense for the Terrapins, 2 interceptions for 33 yards. And this player here is entering his senior year, number 21 defensive back for the Terrapins. And it's nice to see a defensive player other than William Likely contributing to the team. So that is nice to see there for one Mr. Sean Davis. On the kick return side, though, William Likely, one return on the kickoff for 24 yards total. And on the punt returns, average 11 yards per punt return on 2, which is 22 total. Brad Craddock had solid day with extra points. Didn't miss any extra points, 5 for 5. But, hey, who knows what will happen when he reaches the NFL, which, of course, I believe he was in the running for the Lou Groza Award last season and certainly will be a key kicker / punter. And we do have to say punter because 3 punts for 95 yards averaging 31.7 yards per punt. So Kredick does have the leg to do punting and kicking all in the same day. Now, as far as their opponents for next week's game is concerned, or are concerned, I should say, they will be taking on the West Virginia Mountaineers. Now, last season, the Terrapins had some trouble against the Mountaineers. They were facing against senior wide receiver Kevin White, who was just putting up the yardage there for the Mountaineers. Kevin White, of course, was one of the top receivers taken in a 2015 NFL draft by the Chicago Bears. Unfortunately, Kevin White is out for the season with a shin injury. Sort of the same injury, the same league as a first-round pick for the Baltimore Ravens, Bashaud Perriman, but that will be a discussion later on in the show. But looking at their matchup against West Virginia, which will be taking place at 3 o'clock on the 26th of September, getting near the end of September, so brace yourselves there. Fall is soon to appear. Looking at West Virginia and how they have done so far this year, they are averaging 514.5 yards of offense per game and allowing only 298 yards of offense per game on the defensive side. For the Terrapins, 410 yards of offense they are averaging per game. Defensively, however, putrid. 422 yards on average that the Terps are allowing on defense. So the key to stopping the Mountaineers is to basically just, you know, keep them off the field. Just run the clock out. Hopefully you get the Mountaineers, you know, out of their range. Hopefully you get them out of their comfort zone. And maybe, just maybe, you can get them to succumb to playing in panic mode. And hopefully the Terps can get into that situation, because they will need all the strength they can muster up as they enter the Big Ten season. Last year, they entered with a 3-1 record going into the Big Ten season. Hopefully this year it will be different against the Mountaineers. They will be doing the same. But they got to stop that Mountaineers offense. They got to keep them off the field. And, of course, Caleb Rowe, he has to play turnover-free football. That is the only way I see the Terps winning this game against the Mountaineers. Hopefully next week they'll have a 3-1 record going into their Big Ten season, who I believe they will be taking on the Michigan Wolverines at Bird Stadium, which will be in a primetime game. So stay tuned for that. Up next is the Mountaineers.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
149 games in the 2015 MLB season for the 73-76 Baltimore Orioles. 13 games left to play. 5.5 back of the second wildcard spot in the American League. Of course, easier said than done. You have to hurdle the Cleveland Indians, the Minnesota Twins, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and of course, you have to append the holder of that second wild card spot, which is the surprising Houston Astros, who are well on their way to getting into their first winning season since, I don't know, Craig Biggio played, Jeff Bagwell played, Lance Berkman. Yeah, those guys, Roy Oswalt, jeez. It's funny to think that team was from 10 years ago. Much like 10 years ago, the Orioles were a much worse team than the team that's currently playing for a wild card spot. But I digress. The Baltimore Orioles, let's talk about them this week in our Orioles Week in Review. Now, this week, I guess you could say it was so-so in terms of getting wins and getting losses that unfortunately should have been wins in the first place. But let's go back in time and look at how their series have went. Now, Monday, September the 14th, which was the last episode we had of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, back when Ray had a healthy voice, a probable voice. On September 14th, against Boston in Baltimore, the Orioles won 2-0. Kevin Gausman was your winner, improving to 3-6. Rodriguez a loser at 9-6. Britton collecting his 33rd save of the season. Tuesday, September the 15th, they took on Boston and won in a final of 13 innings and extra innings, 6-5. Chaz Rowe was your winner at 3-2. Arrow, the loser, at 0-1. No, that's not the Arrow on television there. That's not that guy. So, yeah, definitely not that Arrow. That Arrow probably would have won the game for the Red Sox, at least this Red Sox team. Wednesday, September the 16th, the Orioles just did not show up on offense or defense, losing 10-1. And Owens was your winner at 3-2. Mike Wright, the loser, at 2-5. Wright just a terrible showing as a starting pitcher in that matchup. Thursday, September the 17th, the Orioles take on the Tampa Bay Rays, or took on the Tampa Bay Rays, speaking in past tense here, winning 4-3 on that Thursday night game. Chaz Rowe was your winner, improving to 4-2. Colome, the loser, at 6-5. Darren O'Day filling in for Zach Britton as your closer, getting his third save of the season. Friday, September the 18th, they took on the Tampa Bay Rays in the four-game series, losing 8-6. Smiley was your winner, improving to 3-2. Tyler Wilson, unfortunately, was the loser in this game, going to 2-2. Brad Boxberger collecting his 35th save of the season. Saturday, September the 19th, taking on the Tampa Bay Rays once again on the road. Orioles won that Saturday game 2-1. Wei-Yun Chen collecting his 10th win of the season, improving to 10-7. Ramirez, the loser, at 10-6. Zach Britton collecting his 34th save of the season. Sunday, September the 20th, unfortunately, was not the case for the Baltimore Orioles, getting 3 out of 4 and winning what would have been, and I'm counting it, 1, 2, 3, what could have been their fourth straight series win. Unfortunately, they have to settle for a series tie on the road, losing 7-6 to the Tampa Bay Rays in the Sunday matchup. Yates was your winner, improving to 1-0. Zach Britton gets the blown save and the loss, taking his record down to 4-1. That's right, Zach Britton no longer undefeated in the 2015 MLB season. The Orioles did start off their Monday game against the Washington Nationals. Unfortunately, that game is postponed and will be moved to the Thursday, September 24th date, which would have been an off day for the Baltimore Orioles. So they will have to settle for the matchup against the Nationals on that date. Now, looking at who impressed in the last 7 days for the Baltimore Orioles, at least offensively, well, let's take a look here. Steve Clevinger, your catcher slash designated hitter slash maybe first baseman. Who knows what position he plays? He's just happy to be playing in the majors. Going 5-for-17 with a .294 batting clip this week, scoring one run, getting a triple, and getting an RBI. So Steve Clevinger, your Pigtown native in Baltimore, from Baltimore, Maryland, doing some outstanding work with the bat this week. Manny Machado going 7-for-24, scoring 5 runs, getting a home run and hitting 3 RBIs for a .292 batting clip. So it's nice to see the all-star third baseman Manny Machado getting his licks in as the season winds down offensively. Chris Davis, .286 batting average, 6 out of 21, 3 runs, 2 doubles, did hit a home run and did get 3 RBIs as well. Your most impressive hitter, though, even though the batting average doesn't say so, was Steve Pierce, 5-for-22, hit .227, but he did get a .320 on-base percentage, 3 home runs, 6 RBIs, also got a double to his credit as well. So Steve Pierce is actually surprisingly going to be a free agent for the Baltimore Orioles come at the end of 2015. Maybe he's asking for another $1 million, $2 million contract deal to stay on their bench, maybe contribute some more. Maybe he's still got some magic in that bat from 2014. Who knows? And at that point, who cares? Because we can only, you know, it's something you can't control at this point. You would like to see the Steve Pierce of 2014 return sometime in 2016, but that's a little far away for us to even look into. Offensively, unfortunately, there are several Orioles of note that didn't do so well this week. J.J. Hardy hit .167. Adam Jones hit .160 with 8 strikeouts. So Adam Jones, compared to weeks prior, just not putting up the numbers offensively for your Baltimore Orioles. Dario Alvarez hitting .167 as well. Nolan Reimold, who had a solid offensive showing last week, .182 batting average. Gerardo Parra still can't get above the average line of .250. I don't know. I know .200 is Mendoza line or lower. I don't know what .250 would be. So we got to find a new name for the .250 line besides just plain average. .222 for Gerardo Parra. So, of course, your hitters of the week were Chris Davis, Manny Machado, Clevinger, and one Steve Pierce. Now, on the pitching side of things for the Baltimore Orioles, looking into the last 7 days played. Brad Brock actually stepped up as a long reliever in three games this week, pitching four scoreless innings, six strikeouts, two walks, only two hits allowed. So nice to see Brad Brock stepping up as your long reliever as the season winds down and keeping his spot on the major league roster. Oliver Drake, two scoreless innings and two appearances. Oliver Drake was a solid closer for the Norfolk Tide in AAA this year. Norfolk Tide also along with the AA Bowie Bay Sox, both respective minor league postseasons, which is odd considering that the Orioles look far away and distant from that position. Looking at other players for the Baltimore Orioles, Darren O'Day, three and two-thirds scoreless innings pitch, got a save, had five strikeouts, no walks, so Darren O'Day keeping his spot as well. That's another player you got to watch out for in free agency, Darren O'Day, a guy who has just been a key contributor for that Orioles bullpen since coming to town in 2012. Wei-Yin Chen, of course, your starting pitcher of the week, had seven innings pitched, gave up one earned run off six hits, seven strikeouts, no walks, with a 1.29 earned run average. So good job there, Wei-Yin Chen, and it's looking harder and harder to re-sign that solid lefty out of the Orioles starting rotation. After Michael Givens, who had a 1.93 earned run average after four and two-thirds innings pitched in three games, it only gets bad from there. Chris Tillman, 4.76 earned run average this past week. Chaz Rowe, even though he has two victories to his stat sheet, did pitch a 6 ERA. Kevin Gausman, the same, 6 ERA and 6 innings pitch. Zach Britton, not so good in three appearances, 6.75 earned run average, including the loss. Ubaldo Jimenez was bad, Ubaldo, this week. Five innings pitched, four earned runs off six hits, and pitching a 7.20 earned run average. The worst, of course, was Mike Wright. Three innings pitched, six earned runs off six hits, including giving up two home runs. And for a guy who was solid in his first several starts of the Major League season, if there is any young pitcher that has declined for the Baltimore Orioles, it is one Mike Wright, and you certainly don't want to see that, including Tyler Wilson, who looked good in his last several starts, unfortunately wasn't able to put it together in his previous start this week with a 12.46 earned run average. So looking ahead for the Baltimore Orioles and who they have coming up this week, of course, they have the three-game series against the Washington Nationals that will resume on Tuesday. And as they move forward, they will be they'll be on the road against the Boston Red Sox, which will be starting on the 25th of Friday and ending on the 27th. Now, the Nationals are a team that sort of have been on the downslope as of this month. The New York Mets are gaining ground in the National League East, actually several games close to gaining a postseason spot themselves, actually close to getting the NL East title. And when was the last time we said that about the New York Mets? So the Nationals have something to fight for. They have to keep their spot alive. The Red Sox certainly do not want to be in the cellar in the AL East once again after winning the World Series in 2013. That certainly would not look good on their resume. So while the Orioles still have some fight in them at 73-76, 5.5 games back at the second wild card spot in the American League, they still had to face two teams against the Nationals and the Red Sox, who at this point really have nothing to lose. So hopefully, maybe a 4-2 week, hopefully a 5-1 week, so that way we can see some ground gained for your Baltimore Orioles for that second American League wildcard spot.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
And last, and certainly least, for at least NFL Week 2 of the 2015 NFL season, are your Baltimore Ravens, who, after what looked like a subpar performance on offense against a strong Denver Broncos defense on the road, you're thinking to yourself, well, 0-1 necessarily is not a death nail for the Ravens. I'm sure they'll come back in Week 2 and face a even more subpar Oakland Raiders team. They'll get it back together on offense. The defense, even though they don't have Terrell Suggs for the remainder of the year due to an Achilles injury, will put it together. Hopefully, just hopefully, we can sit back and enjoy a, 28-17 victory over the Oakland Raiders. We'll be fine with that. Sure, it'll be no problem. No. Just no. Certainly was not the case facing an Oakland Raiders team who in week one looked pedestrian against the AFC North leading Cincinnati Bengals, who have just basically made the Raiders look silly, who have made Phillip Rivers and the Chargers look silly. And in week three in Baltimore could make the Baltimore Ravens look silly. And this team, the Baltimore Ravens, I'll say this, they may be the most bipolar team in all the National League, in all the National Football League. And I'll tell you why. Week one, your defense is outstanding against Peyton Manning and his receiving core that includes Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, just to name a few. And you make them look pedestrian and you keep your team in the game. Meanwhile, Joe Flacco and his offense, that includes Steve Smith Sr., Justin Forsett, they put up nearly 500 yards of offense. You figure week two against the Raiders, you put up 500 yards of offense, you're thinking, wow, what did they win by, 38-3? Was it like Tampa Bay last year? Nope, just no. Certainly was not the case for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, before we get on a tangent and start ranting and raving about what needs to be done with the Baltimore Ravens going into week three at home for the home opener against the Cincinnati Bengals, let's look at the stat sheet real quick. Joseph Vincent Flacco, 32 for 45, 384 yards, two touchdowns, threw one lousy interception at the end of the fourth quarter. We'll get into that shortly. And had a 102.5 rating as quarterback. 75.4 QBR if you want to focus on the made-up ESPN statistics. For the running game for the Baltimore Ravens, Justin Forsett averaged 4.5 yards per carry. Lorenzo Taliaferro coming back into the fold for the Ravens running backs, averaging 4.9 yards per carry. And Javorius, you can call me Buck Allen, averaged 5 yards a carry on his only carry of the game, just one carry. So 4.4 yards per carry by the Baltimore Ravens rushing attack, yet that really was not used to chew up the clock towards the end against the Oakland Raiders defense. We'll get into that shortly. For the Ravens receiving core, Steve Smith Sr., 10 catches, 150 yards, and was targeted 16 times. We'll get into that. Kamar Aiken, definitely we'll get into Kamar Aiken shortly. 5 catches, 89 yards, and a fumble. We'll get into the fumble in a bit. Crockett Gilmore had a career game, though. I will say this. If there is one silver lining here, maybe, just maybe, Joe Flacco has found another target besides Steve Smith Sr. Crockett Gilmore, the tight end Crockett Gilmore, 5 catches for 88 yards and 2 touchdowns. Was a leading fantasy leader in terms of the tight end position all week in week 2 for the NFL. So, hey, if you got to hang your hat on something, good old Crockett's got you. As far as everybody else goes, Marlon Brown, 2 catches for 12 yards, didn't really contribute all that much. Max Williams, 1 catch for 8 yards, still waiting on that potential. Still waiting on that, that best tight end in the NFL draft and the 2015 NFL draft potential. Still waiting on that, Mr. Max Williams out of Minnesota. And that's pretty much it as far as the Ravens receiving core goes. Now, defensively for the Baltimore Ravens, your leading tackle getter was C.J. Mosley with 9 tackles. Darrell Smith also had 8 tackles. As far as the sacks were concerned, Jimmy Smith had 1 sack, just 1 sack, against the Oakland Raiders offensive line, and it was provided by the guy who gave up a huge play to Amari Cooper. That's one Jimmy Smith. We'll get into him shortly. This is going to be a ripping session here. So if you just want to get all your anger out, this is the session of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All that you need to listen to right now. Lardarius Webb, definitely we'll be talking about him. 3 pass defenses, though, for Lardarius Webb. I will give him credit. So at least he did something somewhat useful in the Ravens secondary. Had 5 tackles as well. Will Hill had 2 pass defenses. Also got an interception, but unfortunately also had a major pass interference call or holding call for the secondary. So we'll be talking about that shortly. Michael Campanaro, just 1 kick return for 29 yards. By the way, not to harp on the Ravens, but I'm just going to harp on the NFL in general. They need to take the kick returns back to the original spot, because this is just not doing anything for a kick returner. I mean, if you're a guy that kick returning is your specialty, you are not going to make it in this era's NFL. It's just going to be touchback after touchback after touchback. Hey, you get drafted by the Colts, forget about it. You ain't even going to get a kick return in that arena there. Now, punt returns, no Baltimore punt returns recorded for the Ravens. Justin Tucker, if Crockett Gilmore was your player of the week for the Ravens, Justin Tucker had to be player 1B for the Ravens, player 1B of the week. 4-for-4 from the field goals, 37 was the longest he made. Made all those long extra points as well. Contributed to 15 points for the Ravens right there. As far as punting goes, Sam Cook averaged 46 yards on the punt on two punts, including one on inside the 20. And that's where we ended there for the Ravens. Now, let's look at Oakland stats. This will make you really angry as I read them along. Derek Carr, 30 for 46, 351 yards, three touchdowns, one interception, 100.9 rating, 85.6 ESPN QBR rating. Am I reading this right? Is this Derek Carr or is this Rich Gannon circa 2002, 2003? Or Rich Gannon from Kansas City? I mean, hell, that was the last quarterback that was worth a damn for the Oakland Raiders. You figured that guy just came out of retirement from a time machine and suited up for the Raiders. Nope. It is one young Derek Carr who most of us thought he wasn't even going to play this week. We thought it was going to be Matt McGloin after Derek Carr made a dumb decision of doing a stiff arm against the Bengals defense, taking himself out of the game. So kudos to Derek Carr there for putting up the yards and just showing his potential as a young quarterback in this league, because certainly the Ravens secondary had no answer for this guy. No answer at all. Now, as far as the rushing attack goes, the Ravens did not fare as well as they did against Denver's running attack. They averaged 5.1 yards per carry total for the Oakland Raiders running game. Latavius Murray had 15 carries for 65 yards, 4.3 yards per carry, and a touchdown. Derek Carr had two carries for 23 yards. 23 yards by Derek Carr. You figure you contain the guy and make sure he doesn't get out of the wheelhouse for you, but apparently he can. Apparently the guy does have wheels. And this is where it'll make you angry. Michael Crabtree, 9 catches, 111 yards, and a touchdown. Amari Cooper, first-round pick Amari Cooper out of Alabama, 7 catches, 109 yards. 109 yards for Amari Cooper, one touchdown, including a 68-yard pass over Jimmy Smith's head for a touchdown to start the game, which just took everybody by surprise. And I guess in terms of your top receivers, those are your guys right there. Curtis Lofton, of course, recorded a fumble recovery for the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders defense, and this boggles my mind, they had no sacks against the Ravens' offensive line. However, they were able to get two turnovers against the Baltimore Ravens. And I think I said Baltimore Ravens offensive line. Yeah, the Baltimore Ravens offensive line gave up no sacks, but still allowed two turnovers, one on special teams and one on offense towards the end of the fourth quarter. Nico Thorpe had an interception for negative 12 yards. Of course, that made no difference for the 25-year-old defensive back for the Oakland Raiders. And that pretty much was your game right there. That pretty much sealed the fate there for the Baltimore Ravens in the black hole of all places. Now, this is the part where I get pissed off, and you should be pissed off with me. Week 1 loss at Denver in Sports Authority Field against the Denver Broncos, a team that is a perennial playoff contender. I get it. I understand it. Heck, we even saw it on Thursday Night Football against the Kansas City Chiefs. They had 5 turnovers. I understand it. Week 2 against an Oakland Raiders team that was demoralized in Week 1 against a visiting Cincinnati Bengals team, you lose to that team by 4 points? I don't get it. And certainly you shouldn't get it either. Basically, this Baltimore Ravens team is playing like a team that does not play with any urgency whatsoever. Let's start with actually, let's start with the fourth quarter. You have Joe Flacco towards the end of the game. His running attack is averaging well over 4.5 yards per carry on every carry that they're given. You figure as you're entering the two-minute mark, even with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left, you decide to make throws to wide receivers that can do one of two things. Either it can be a scoring play at this point, or there'll be drops. Key drops that stop the clock and give the Raiders even more time to think about what they're going to do. The Ravens did none of that at all. They did not play like a team that knew how to wind the clock down, that knew how to eat up the clock. The Ravens didn't do that. They allowed things to be just the way they are. Once again, Steve Smith was in another situation where had he caught the ball, he could have won his team the game, or at least towards the end of the fourth quarter, tied the game for them, or have a touchdown that was good enough for a tie, and was put in a situation where he couldn't keep both his feet in bounds. You stop the clock, and you have to settle for a field goal, which at the time put you in a 33-30 lead. You put the football in the hands of a hot Derek Carr, a hot Raiders receiving corps of Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. You couldn't stop any of those guys. You couldn't stop any of them if you tried. And not to mention, to make matters worse, instead of Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper, the one guy who had one catch all game, Seth Roberts, caught the game-winning touchdown. And you're looking on TV thinking you're in an alternate universe. You're seeing this guy just jump into the crowd like he's at Lambeau Field, like the Green Bay Packers just won a game. So you're thrown into this completely alternate universe where now you have to come back against the Oakland Raiders with less than 30 seconds left on the clock. So what does John Harbaugh do? What does offensive coordinator Mark Trestman do? What does Joe Flacco do? Oh, they just lob it down the field. Boom, gets picked off by the Oakland Raiders secondary. And that's your game right there for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, regarding the offense, you could blame Joe Flacco for that, but this isn't really necessarily the blame Joe Flacco week for the loss. He put up almost 400 yards of offense. I think that is the last guy you want to blame the game on. Granted, he threw a dumb interception towards the end of the fourth quarter, but realistically, history has shown when you have less than 30 seconds left on the clock and you're starting from your own 20, the odds of you winning the game, and the Ravens had to win the game. They couldn't kick it with a game-tying field goal. The odds of you winning that game were minimal. So you have that. Now, as far as the defense goes, you can tell from that game they sorely missed number 55 outside linebacker Terrell Suggs. And granted, they picked up Jason Babin, who was sitting on his couch not too long ago at home. They pick him up and don't even activate him for the week two game. Now, whether he is activated for week three, I am not so sure, but I do know this. The Ravens need a pass rush, and they need it bad. Or they need to make some desperate measures. They need to make some desperate moves. Here's a crazy idea. Why don't you have a meeting with Joe Flacco? And why don't you have that meeting in relation to his salary cap number? I mean, his salary cap hit is going to be crazy in the next couple years. Why not have him restructure his contract? And while you're at it, when you restructure his contract, why don't you use some of that extra cap space you gained this year and talk to the Seattle Seahawks? Call them up and say, hey, Seattle, I understand you're having problems with your all-pro safety Cam Chancellor. Here's a proposal. Let's get him off your hands. We will trade you a second-round pick for Cam Chancellor. We'll give you a second-round pick for Cam Chancellor. We'll take him off your hands. He'll be in a new setting. He'll make our team better, and hopefully our second pick will make your team better. You'll save yourself some cap space, and who knows? Maybe it'll do some good for you guys because you're in the same boat as we are, 0-2. So that's my crazy idea right there. I don't know if they'll trade for Cam Chancellor, even though it would look great on paper at this point. But this is a Ravens team that is bipolar. We do not know what is going to happen in week three against the Cincinnati Bengals at home in their home opener. I mean, it's going to be a day where they celebrate the 20 years of being a successful franchise in Baltimore. But at the same time, the last time the Ravens had an anniversary was in 2005. And I remember the home opener against the Indianapolis Colts where Kyle Bowler was cheered off of the field after suffering an injury. Hopefully we're not near those times again. Hopefully, just hopefully, this Baltimore Ravens team can turn around against Cincinnati. Hopefully, Jason Babin can find his earlier form from years past and become the pass rusher that the team so desperately needs. And I hate to be the pessimist this week once again in terms of predictions, but against Andy Dalton, against A.J. Green, against the running tandem of Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill, and against their tight end Tyler Eifert, who just looks like a stud so far to start the season, I just do not see this Ravens team pulling off a victory against the AFC North leading Cincinnati Bengals. I see them losing, I don't know, I'll say an odd number, 29-23. And I think we're going to be in a situation where they're 0-3. And historically, an 0-3 record does not bode well for you if you look to enter the 2015 postseason. I believe only one team in the last 25 years has went 0-3 and made the postseason. So the Ravens are going to be in that situation. So there's a solo show for this week. Hopefully I didn't bore you guys too much with statistics and dead analogy. Ray is on the DL this week, so this is why I had the solo show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully he's listed as questionable next week. Hopefully the Orioles have a winning week. Hopefully the Terrapins football team get a big win over the West Virginia Mountaineers. And I pray that the Ravens get a win against Cincinnati because they so desperately need it at this point. Thank you guys for tuning in to this week's edition of the Baltimore Sports Free For All. Be sure once again to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Spreaker, and of course, sfmsports.net. This is Joshua Hall, and as Ray would say, see y'all.
The Baltimore Sports Free For All.